So some of the key moments in 1963, early April through May of 1963, you had the Children's Crusade in Birmingham, Alabama. You had the mailman murder, which is the death of William Moore, who was a postal worker and was advocating for desegregation, and he was found murdered in Gadsden, Alabama on April 23rd of 1963. You had the Woolworth sit-ins in May in Jackson, Mississippi. We had the police brutality at Winona Jail in Mississippi. That was June 9th. As you probably know, Fannie Lou Hamer was one of those that was jailed and brutally attacked and permanently injured from that attack. And then you had the stand in the schoolhouse door at my alma mater, the University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa, on June 11th. And that same evening, you have the address from John F. Kennedy, where the civil rights address, where he makes a promise to move forward with civil rights legislation from the federal perspective. And then the following day, in the early morning hours, you have Medgar Evers, who was murdered in his driveway in front of his children and his wife. And that's in Jackson, Mississippi. So you have quite a bit of things that are fomenting during the course of 1963. And then, of course, you know, a few 11 days later, King comes to Detroit and he gives the speech, Walk to Freedom. And this moment in Detroit was the largest demonstration of freedom marches in history at that time, with 125,000 people making a procession down Woodward Avenue. And they went to Cobo Hall. He gave a speech before 25,000 individuals. And this speech in Detroit is considered kind of the precursor to the now immortalized I Have a Dream speech in Washington.
And oftentimes, it's those who understand and know this history and this connection with Martin Luther King Jr., the march, as well as the speech, we often think that this the city was one of the places that he honed that speech. So that way, when he went to Washington, he had a complete and put together, I guess you can say, a moment for the world.
You're absolutely right. If you go back to listen to the transcripts of the speech in June of 1963 here in Detroit, it is actually longer than the one that he presents in Washington. And there are moments of parallel structure where he uses the I Have a Dream in the Detroit speech, but he organizes it a bit different in the Washington speech. It comes a lot earlier in the speech, and there is a crescendo and then a refrain that ends that's different than Detroit. The Detroit refrain ends with him talking about the hope that the Black community's money allows them to rent and buy wherever their money leads them, as well as being able to have jobs. And so 63 is really about racial segregation, police brutality, and segregation both in jobs as well as in education. And so this speech that he presented in Detroit on June 23rd in 1963 was really an opportunity for him to build upon some of the things that were happening across the nation in a city, I think, that was really ready for some changes.
That was that one of the things I was going to say is the city of Detroit in general, we've seen that it's a city that definitely is a Black city, mm-hmm. But we see it's a city that has no issue with fighting for what is right. And so for me to see that he was here, especially during that time, it makes me wonder, like, why was Detroit one of those focal points that he decided to highlight?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. You know, Detroit had elected what they perceived at the time a progressive liberal mayor. He turned out to not be as interested in some of the things that Black communities had voted him in for. So that was, you know, that's another conversation for another day. But I think it was an opportunity to create some allies in a northern city that was still facing kind of de facto segregation versus segregation by law in the South. And it was a great opportunity for him to demonstrate that it doesn't matter where you are in the U.S. There's a lot of things happening in the South with the viciousness of the police dogs, et cetera. But the exact same police brutality, de facto segregation was happening in other parts of the U.S., not just the South. And so Detroit was a great place to be because Detroit was at a crucial moment where there were fissures in leadership when it came to Black leadership, where there was a more militant, working class Black nationalist movement that was developing versus, you know, your NAACP and Urban League that were more conservative at this time. And so you know, I don't know that he could have envisioned kind of how much the working class and Black nationalist movement was going to take hold in Detroit, but his presence there was definitely encouraged by the Detroit Council of Human Rights, which was the Black radical movement that really put together the march in June of 1963. And so that's Reverend C.L. Franklin, Reverend Cleage. They were co-founders of the Detroit Council for Human Rights. And they were really against including kind of the mayor and the police commissioner at that time because they wanted it to be a completely Black movement. And so this was an important time in Detroit's history when they were making the decisions about the kinds of direct action they were going to participate in as a city.
Just really, once again, interesting things. And as you were talking about Cynthia Scott and her death, I was instantly thrown back to the George Floyd situation and thinking about the way that, you know, his image was basically tried to be tarnished in the media and tarnished on social media and to help the officers get off of what they did. And so if we can connect the two times of what we're going through right now versus what we've seen happen in our past 60 years ago.
One of the ways that we can dehumanize a murder or a police sanctioned murder is to make that person seem unworthy, regardless of what someone's past or history is, whether it's criminal or not, is irrelevant. When you are a police officer who is committed to upholding the law and operating within the means of the law equitably, regardless of racial, ethnic, sexual orientation, et cetera. And so I think when we think about the past and the current, there aren't a lot of things that have changed. And I think that brings us to the speech March on Washington. When we talk about both the Detroit speech and the March on Washington, when we talk about the level of poverty and how it has affected cities across the U.S. as well as rural areas. If King were here today, he would absolutely, speaking in Detroit, would address the issues of poverty, where you have individuals who are who own a lot of Detroit, but they're not Detroiters. They are not parts of Black communities. And the sprawl of the city that's taking place that does not represent the diversity of Detroit in any material way would be something I think that King would highlight if he were to give a speech here in Detroit today.
I think about Martin Luther King Jr. I think about the speech, and I think about, number one, some of the things that he said later in his life as he got closer to his untimely death, murder, actually. But we think about some of the things he was saying afterwards, and he often referenced to economic power and economic growth and so many different things. Why do you think that is a history of Martin Luther King Jr. that we are not aware of his kind of
shift.
Tweaks? Yeah, there you go. The shift in his thoughts.
His shift did happen towards the end, where he was more focused on addressing class issues and trying to really gather together segments of the population that generally don't talk to each other. So if we talk about rural white America, who is facing the same things as urban Black, urban Hispanics, urban, you know, all the groups, right? And if you think about it from a class perspective and you connect and you coalesce all of those people there, it's a really strong and large number. It is to the benefit of those who have the most to keep them separate and to say, oh, rural white issues aren't, or rural Black issues aren't the same issues that people who live in urban cities face. And it's economics, it's access to quality healthcare, it's access to great education. Those are the things that matter to people in order to pursue happiness, which is one of his lines in his speech, the pursuit of happiness. And so, you know, if he had been allowed to live longer, I would have loved to have seen how the nation could have benefited from changing their perspectives on how poverty is an underlying cause of a lot of people's inability to pursue happiness, but also their rights and their liberty. You know, my soul, look back and wonder how I made it over. How I made it over. Coming on
How did I make it over? Tell me how I got over. I've been falling and rising all these years, but you know my soul. Look back and wonder, how did I make it over?